How much is the Buddha? How much for the Dharma? How much for the Sangha? Ecco, go, ecco. It's kind of a summer crowd today. We had a Sangha party yesterday, and Dharma camp is next week, and all the cues say summertime right now. Also today we installed a Shuso, who would be sitting here typically, but we'll get there next week. Years ago, we had a Hasen ceremony, and the Hasen verse included a reference to body and mind dropping away. And a few days after that, I got a question about that, and that. That conversation kind of became the seed for this talk. And like the short answer there is that there's degrees of dropping away, but it's generally referring to
Referring to
modes of modes of being in which we perceive and interact without the influence of sense of self, not having to reference that. And so that might be momentary, just arising from absorption in meditation or an activity or just the situation kind of pulling it forward. Or it might be, like a more life-changing experience, like Dogen references in his description of his Kensho under Rujing. I'm gonna, Dogen gets the assist for this talk. I'm gonna draw from several of his works. Shinjin Datsuraku is the Japanese for dropping away of body and mind. And it's a term that both Dogen and his teacher Rujing used pretty frequently. Okay. So I want to start with a discourse by Dogen in the Eihei Koroku. An ancient worthy said, "The skin is completely dropped off." My late teacher Rujing said, "Body and mind are dropped off." Already having arrived here, how is it? Who says this very mind is the Buddha? No mind, no Buddha is not the way. If someone wants to know the ancestral teacher's meaning, in the moonlight of the old rabbit, a crane in his cold nest awakens from a dream. So there we have it. Any questions? Think it's beautiful. I think it resonates. I see a trail of breadcrumbs that Dogen is leaving here. And I don't think all those breadcrumbs are meant to be analyzed and understood, right? They're meant to be investigated over time, which is a much more internal process, right? It's a much more quiet process. So let's begin some of that. An ancient worthy said, "The skin is completely dropped off." So the skin is a sense organ, right? Anatomically, energetically. Something changes in how we perceive, right? Is both quicker and slower. It's more immediate, but there's not that push of karmic momentum of narrative. The skin is also the most obvious boundary of who we think we are. And we get comfortable with a fairly static approximation of us, right? And it's a fairly poor model. Dropping that habit, a more realistic version is constantly changing and includes much more of our surroundings, our environment. Also, the skin protects us. At depth, experience goes right in. It feels more intimate, vulnerable, raw. My late teacher Ruijing said, body and mind are dropped off. There are so many versions of this in literature. So many Buddhist practitioners have said some version of body and mind don't appear, don't apply right now. Nama rupa in Sanskrit, going way back. These are the necessary components. When these things arise, we perceive self. Somehow, at some times, the ways in which we recognize self, the way in which we recognize who we are, those procedures don't happen. They don't work. They don't count. Who says this very mind is the Buddha? No mind, no Buddha is not the way. Here, Dogen's kind of trolling Matsu, who was a very prominent teacher 500 years before Dogen. As profound and important as an expression of Dharma might be, it's always limited. This mind is Buddha is a truth, it's a handhold, it's a breadcrumb, and it's also something we can attach to. So leaning into what is the accurate relationship to this truth right now? If someone wants to know the ancestral teacher's meaning, in the moonlight of the old rabbit, a crane in its cold nest awakens from a dream. So first off, it's a conditional, if we want to know. If we want to know, then something, something. So it's assessing, Dogen's assessing our motivation. How much does this matter? Do I want more depth right now? Am I willing to give up some skin? Also, it's not about information. If we want to know, is saying if we want to become familiar with, Sekito's version is, if you want to know the undying person in the hut. Moonlight of the old rabbit. Old rabbit is a metaphor for a full moon in Chinese poetry, which is then a metaphor for emptiness in Zen literature. This is inviting the absolute into the conversation. Crane is a symbol of longevity, solitude, focus, awakening from a dream. Somehow this is more real than that. So just suggestive breadcrumbs. Perhaps we've gathered that this endeavor needs to matter, right? That it somehow involves emptiness, it somehow takes time. It causes a shift in perception of who we are. In Dogen's fascicle Henzan, this is from a different work, the Shobogenzo. This Henzan is often translated as thorough explanation, exploration, not explanation. Part of this fascicle, Dogen is telling the story of the sixth ancestor, Wei Ning, admitting a student into his monastery. And so they're having this conversation, and Wei Ning asks, you know, what is it that thus comes? And the student just can't deal with that question, goes to sit. And 8 years later, comes back and says, okay, I got it. And Wei Ning says, oh, really? I'm paraphrasing a little bit here. And the student, Nanyue, Wei Rung, says, to describe a thing does not hit the target. So which is basically saying the same thing as Dogen's feedback to Matsu, right? Matsu happened to be Nanyue's Dharma brother. So Hui Nang challenges him, do you rely on practice or an experience or not? Right? Another translation for that is this a substitute for training? Nanyue says, it is not that there is no practice and experience, but to taint it is impossible. And so Hui Nang says, I am like that, you are like that, and the Buddhas and ancestors of India were also like that. And so Nanyue goes back to the meditation hall for another 8 years. I'm not gonna like pull that one apart in the same way as the previous one. But just hold that for a moment. We toss that pebble in the pond. What happens? What is it that thus comes? It's just invitation. It's just like how is insight appearing here? How close can we get to our experience? So spending 16 years in a Zendo is a viable strategy, right? It might work for you, it might not. Dropping body and mind is certainly one potential outcome, right? But that kind of transformation isn't the only possibility. We could stagnate. We could get caught in a trap somehow. We could lose ground. So our breadcrumbs have underlined that something it needs to matter, right? And it involves emptiness and time. Bodhicitta is way-seeking mind, often translated. It's this mind that recognizes the possibility of enlightenment, and there's an impulse towards. Bodhicitta is telling us that this matters, right? This endeavor of how close can we get to it? What is it that thus comes? There are times when I feel that sharply. I'm fervent, I'm dedicated, I'm wholehearted in my practice, right? When there's this kind of all-encompassing imperative to be here. And there are times when I'm coasting, when I rely on what I've already learned, when I'm juggling a lot of different motivations, and this is just part of it. So, noticing how bright that light is that we're shining, that we're turning within. There's no like final simple answer. There's a really wide range of way-seeking mind in myself and those who come in for Sanzen. I won't speak for all of you, but I've seen a fair number of you in Sanzen. Skeptical doubt is one of the biggest things that gets in the way of this, of bodhicitta, of this motivation to practice. It can show up as self-doubt. I just can't do it, or practice doubt is not going to work for me. It can show up as kind of a generalized insecurity. And it can also show up as a kind of intellectual anxiety, right? It's kind of holding back until we get it, right? Or because we think there's a conflict somehow. Like, I don't want to be attached to enlightenment, so I'm not going to try to get enlightened, right? That would be skeptical doubt confusing you. Another one of the impediments for bodhicitta really burning bright in life is bandwidth, right? Just being tired. It's easy to use up all of our motive juice on the affairs of daily life, logistics. In Dogen's comment on Nanyue, he says, "We do not esteem idly entering one monastery and leaving another monastery as thorough exploration. We esteem discovery with the whole of the eyes as thorough exploration. We esteem attainment of the ultimate through action as thorough exploration. To see through to the end, how thick is the skin of the face? This is thorough exploration." So, generally, imagine bodhicitta as this continuum, this spectrum, right? In a moment, we could have really bright, vital, powerful motivation to awaken together with all beings. And another, like that, might sound really dry and tedious and less important, right? Another axis is spiritual nourishment, say. I don't have a great name for that. This is kind of the, this is, I'm trying to capture a couple of things here. It's partly access to emptiness, right? It's partly access to stillness. It's also like 16 years in the Zendo, right? Just that time spent. Are conditions such that our practice is supported? Some of that is external, a lot of it's internal. How much sitting, how much stillness certainly plays a role there. How much accepting, you know, just how we meet our day is part of that. Life events are a big part of that. Death tends to help us access a level of depth for a while, right? Travel, stress, big changes tend to decrease depth, right? But it's a complex relationship. It also weakens the sense of who we are. So there's a plus and a minus there. If you're noticing kind of how this shows up in your life, you're probably asking if you're having experiences of clarity. Are there moments in the last week of feeling like you just woke up from a dream in a cold nest? There are times of remembering a mode of being that wasn't there before. Oh, right, this is who I am. This is familiar. If that's happening in a bunch, and it feels good, right? There's a landing. It's not just like, oh yeah, I'm in this rut again. If that's happening a bunch, right? At high levels on this spectrum, we're feeling connected to our practice, right? Where it feels like life is really meaningful. We're touching a sense of awe, of mystery, of gratitude, of beauty on a regular basis. So I'm painting a really simplified picture here, but I still think it's useful because it suggests what we need to adjust when, based on where we are on this, when things are not going well. So in this kind of grossly simplified picture, we've got this one axis of bodhicitta, and we have another axis of spiritual nourishment, say, okay? The best scenario, so if we are high in both, let's put that over here, right? We have high motivation, we have high sense of like practices happening to us, like we're getting it. We're getting lots of little moments of experience that are bright and spacious. There's probably some formal practice involved if you're over here. There's good energy and it's flowing in the right direction. Yeah. If we have motivation, nourishment. If we have low motivation, but a good amount of stillness, right, over here in this quadrant, right, that tends more towards stagnation, right? So this might happen if there's like a pretty healthy batch of past experiences built up of practice over time. There's good direction, but there's not enough energy going into it. I should have drawn this out for myself. So over here we have high motivation, low nourishment. Yes. Okay, so this is getting caught by self, right? This is where we tend to spin in this quadrant, where we really want it to work. We really want to change. We really want to like get better. And there's something about how we're going about it where we're not letting it in. Right, this is kind of hungry ghostish. One way that can play out is like focusing on self-improvement, right? Or self-disparagement, right? That like shows up a lot in the narrative. There may be a ruminative or reactive quality that's heavily conditioned by past karma in this quadrant. And often when this like quadrant is prominent for someone over time, there's some kind of a barrier that is preventing practice experiences from landing successfully. It's not that they're not happening, it's that they're not getting digested. All right, so there's plenty of energy, but the direction is confused somehow. And then finally, the last quadrant, I figured this one out finally, is low motivation, low nourishment, which is a bummer and probably tends to involve like often the kind of vicious circles of, you know, heavier karma and emotion. So we don't live in any of these, right? We touch them. We appear. We partake. I'm painting this picture so that it's easier for us to recognize when we're not in the practice relationship we might hope to be in, right? And have a sense of what might be helpful here. And like, this is subtle, tricky stuff, right? When we're good at fooling ourselves. So it's hard to keep, to stay in this quadrant over a long time, right? We all need support for that to happen. That's why temples exist, right? Is to make it easy to get that support. Part of what I get from Henzan, this fascicle on thorough exploration with the sixth ancestor and Nanyue, is that we need to examine our life exhaustively and keep doing it. Right? There's no end point. Our life isn't an abstraction. It's not theoretical. It's moment after moment. Anything we experience can be an object of examination, of investigation. The invitation is to offer your full attention, right? Whatever it happens to be. It's not that there are not there is a lot of choice in where we put the attention, and you know, some places where you land it are more wholesome than others, but regardless of where you put your attention, if you let it soak in, if you keep bringing it back, like that's this quality of investigation. It's really different from trying to relate to it, right? Trying to analyze it or note who I am in relation to this, right? That is an intellectual activity. It's very verbal. It's fast and it's extremely repetitive. It's one of the like hallmarks of it. If you're watching, if we are investigating, if we are doing this thorough exploration that Dogen talks about, it's not repetitive. It's quite fresh, right? It feels a little like too fresh, probably. That's the rawness. That's the not having skin part of it. So it should feel a little bit edgy, right? A little bit uncomfortable to be that attentive to something, even if it's like texture of the wood, right? So try it out. One of the things that most people notice is that habitually we offer enough attention to recognize and no more, right? Like we just try to, if there's a phenomena out there, we try to match it to my model. Oh, that's wood. Oh, it's been sanded. Maybe, right? And that's enough. That's all I need to get through the day. But we're missing out. Like there's so much more if we delve in. If we just keep returning, and this is what we're practicing in Zazen, right? So we get better at just returning. Regardless of whether the phenomena is inside the skin or outside the skin, it gets interesting. It gets more interesting, more rich, more meaningful, more nuanced. It requires a kind of rigor and patience with ourselves. The more we return, the deeper into the experience we go. the closer it gets, the better we can answer what is it that thus comes. And if we do it enough and there's bright bodhicitta and we have adequate support, dropping away is part of that picture. We started a little early, but I think that was a short talk also, but let's bat it around a little bit. Some light's burning.
So we have the opportunity now for comments and questions. If you're in the room, raise your hand and I'll bring the mic to you. Say your name and put the microphone close to your face. And then if you're on Zoom, you can raise your hand and the Zoom host will unmute you, and you can also type your question in the chat.
Hi, I'm Guy. Thank you for your talk. I'm a big fan of graphical representations of metaphors, so I resonated with that a lot. And I also have a kind of dialectical materialist approach to reality, so I appreciated the fact that you balanced the internal and the external there in terms of our path in life. I feel as though there's a tendency in Zen to very much emphasize the internal and not give a lot of attention, or maybe sort of be a little bit, I don't know, cavalier about the external, even though, as you say, we create this space with a great deal of attention to the support and the external elements. Yeah, I just want to say thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
Glad it landed.
This question on Zoom from Tony. Whoop.
Right.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, thanks. I hesitate to ask, but you did say there was a bit of time. I'm finding your two-axis model very helpful, but I wasn't fast enough to catch everything. Would you mind going over the four quadrants again and relating each to a couple of buzzwords that I can write down?
Okay, so over here we have high motivation and lots of like experiences, like confirmatory experiences. Right? Like basically like we're feeling practice. Down here, and then over here, oh shoot.
I forget what these doesn't need to be spatial.
Low motivation. Okay. So here we're getting the confirming experiences, we're getting nourished by practice, but our motivation is low. Right? We're not like the bodhicitta is not bright.
Okay.
Up here we have high motivation, but low nourishment. I think we reversed these from the first version. Yep. Okay. Anyway, you can draw it however you want. There's two axes, right? So if there's high motivation, but low nourishment, that's where it gets into like captured by self, basically, where we're, it's about self-improvement. It's about, or kind of shame spiral sorts of things. And then down here is the bummer, where there's low motivation and also low sense of, receiving support.
Great. Thank you.
It's confusing, especially because I can see myself and I'm like, normally that's not the case.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Dio. On the subject of the graph, it seems to me that I have a lot more control over like my approach. Like you described one of the axes as like stillness, or like what I'm bringing to it, as opposed to like what I'm like the nourishment, the confirmation that I'm receiving. The thing that you pointed out that was the scariest to me was the stagnation quadrant. And like, that is a situation of like, the things that I can control are like good, and the things I can't control are not present.
Yeah.
And like,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate you like bringing that layer forward. That's really helpful.
Yeah. So like, I'm wondering how to get from quadrant stagnation to quadrant good without like going to bummer. Or do I need to go to bummer? Like, sure, I have to shake things up.
Yeah, I think really mostly my sense is that that's a like a willingness to be uncomfortable, right? Like this sort of like motivation comes from discomfort, right? From like the sense of like, whoa, there is change happening. Mm-hmm. And so like, if we're too comfortable, like we don't get enough of those reminders. And so to like invite, and also value, right? Like that, like we can get in the habit of, like managing our life very smoothly, very conveniently. And that's an obstacle. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. That resonates a lot.
Hi, this is Howard. Thanks for your talk. Could you say something about avoiding gaining idea and motivation and how those might differ?
Yeah, sure. So the like way-seeking mind is, like a near enemy for way-seeking mind is like, I got to get it, like attachment to outcome. And so it is possible to have like quite a bit of this sort of like full sail of practice energy without attachment to outcome. And the thing is, attachment feels really different. And so just get familiar with what it's like to want a result, to have a sesshin go a certain way, to appear a certain way, you know, when you're doing a Dharma talk or asking a question on a Dharma talk or whatever it may be, and know that it's baloney, right?
Thank you.
There you have it.
Hey, this is Yukio. I'm not sure about articulating this, but I'm curious about sort of what's in my volitional sort of access. And I heard you say hungry ghost being sort of an obstacle to being able to feel like the spiritual nourishment side of things. And maybe I just looking to explore a little bit more both of those axes that you're talking about. So the motivation, it seems like sometimes, okay, you pointed out motivation can come from being uncomfortable, but what if you're exhausted because you're uncomfortable? I don't know, just sort of like looking at like these little combinations and like maybe some salient points of like what to lean into. So one would be like leaning into discomfort because motivation can come from that, and maybe vulnerability in order to be able to receive nourishment, or what might you say?
Well, yeah. So, so what I appreciate about that is that you're pointing out like, it's a much more layered tapestry than like these four quadrants. Right. And the interaction effects, like there's a lot going on there. And so part of, getting good at practice is that we get familiar with like the particular routes through which we tend to travel, like the particular traps that we tend to like within each of these quadrants, the particular like reminders that have been useful over time. So we just make it more and more personal. Like you get more familiar. Sangha is really useful in reflecting some of that, because if we triangulate, we'd generally have a better, like a more accurate view. Yeah, I like basically bring that to San Zen, is what I would say.
Hi, this is Jiyu. I'm curious about bringing this back to body and mind drop away. Like the gist of this, for my practice, this seemed to be like recognizing how much my story isn't what I thought it was, and that it's more an illusion or just a way of grabbing onto a moment and trying to feel secure, and that it doesn't really describe this accurately, and this changes constantly. And so the line that leads into that, like there's an encouragement to forget yourself, and then it's like, oh, I'm actualized by everything in this. And so we have to use words to even share this around, but it feels very embodied, and like there's a heart work that happens to be like, yes, this happens here. And I just wanted to kind of throw that direction and ask, maybe in your own practice, it starts in the mind, but eventually it's embodied and it's just this continual going. And does that resonate?
Yeah. I mean, for myself, like the, like how I resonate with that is that I have a really like reliable trust that there's something like in whatever I'm meeting, whatever the thing is, like is kind of fundamentally beautiful, right? And and I don't have to get it or fix it or like do anything particularly, but just like allow this to play out. And I just repeat that a lot, that kind of remembering.
That's helpful. That resonates, and it makes me think of the equanimity quality of the Brahmaviharas, like just letting the world be.
Yeah. I think that's in particular useful when the not having skin part feels really aversive, when it feels too vulnerable, too frightening, that like to be able to access that like kind of basic goodness of reality is a really useful antidote.
Thank you.
All right. Are you heading somewhere? You are. Okay.
Circle.
Hey there, Shojin here. I just wanted to riff on what you were saying from that prior question, because I feel that the courage factor, I think this is where the compassion comes in. It just can be, I just spent 11 days with my in-laws. And there was some wonderful times, of course, and challenging times, but it was all internal. And what blew me away was the extent to which the me identity mind was screaming for attention, from the people that I was with or whatever the situation was. And it was like witnessing that show amidst what was happening really took me by surprise. Mm-hmm. It was like, wow, are you kidding me? And just settling back, into this quality of dropping away in the midst of that. And I think that it was just a good reminder for myself, because there was a part of my own experience that was very judgmental and like, hey, man, you shouldn't be struggling this hard with
with this, you know, and it was very difficult. So it just took so much courage just to sail back, watch the show.
Yeah.
And know when actually I couldn't do it any longer.
Yeah.
And I had to go complain to somebody about something. The complaining was done. I could come back and watch the show.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's a nice, you know, display of that familiarity, right? That like, okay, like we all have limited capacity. We all like, you know, have aspirations beyond which we're meeting. And yeah, there's just a lot of like feeling it out, like kind of moment by moment, what's possible here? What can I get to? And I think this, you know, Shojin talked about like courage there. It sounds very similar to like compassion, right? To just like offering yourself metta, like, yeah, I think that it's kind of the same process there. Oh, one more. Okay. Sure. Go for it. We're doing fine on time. So last one.
Thank you. This is Bridget. You said the word bandwidth during the talk, and it kind of gave me like, oh, and, because I think sometimes for me, that can be an easy, you said it in the context of, we only have so much like motivational bandwidth that mm-hmm. we can use it up doing anything really. And that can be a real slippery cop out for me in terms of maintaining practice, because mm-hmm. I can have loads of responsibilities. And I have found that for me, at least, if I indulge that sense of bandwidth too much, it's not helpful. And that I gain more bandwidth by prioritizing like sitting, something like that. And so I don't know, can you speak to that like at all?
Yeah, again, this is one of the nuanced ones. I think it's true that like we do gain like bandwidth from contemplative activity. And obviously it's true that we can easily fill up, you know, with stuff, right? We can spend all our energy on stuff very easily without devoting it to contemplative activity. I think like maybe part of what, I would tease out here is like there's an acceptance piece, which is important, of just like, okay, like this is where I am right now. I might be combining your questions a little bit, but whatever, here we are.
There we are emergent. There for me in that.
Yeah, okay. So like there's a self, like there's an acceptance piece, a meta piece of like, oh, this is what is, and this is what I have capacity for right now. And there's also, which I hear you like speaking to a little bit, like a self-respect piece of like, and my commitment is my, like there is this motivation, which is like, bodhicitta is bright. And so like both are true. Like we need access to both of those energies. And if we only veer in one direction, like that's a miss. Right, we need to be able to steer towards acceptance and compassion. We also need to be able to steer towards like resolve and determination. Yeah.
Thank you.